What's good, everybody? Monday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete Jensen and Rob Reese joined by guest James Harding, Waiver Wire James. Follow him at Waiver Wire James. And what's up, guys? I mean, we're in the fantasy playoffs now in most leagues. So this is when you really, you know, start to get your roster in shape for the next 3-4 weeks. You build ahead and hope to bring home the championship trophy.
Yeah, it's here, James. And are you in the playoffs in any leagues? Did you get there, or how you doing?
I'm in the playoffs. I'm in the semifinals, actually. One of my leagues started last week, and I missed the playoffs just barely on a heartbreaking loss in another league. So, yeah, you know, the playoffs are going strong for me, though, in my big keeper league. So, you know, let's break it down, because I'm excited. We got a lot of guys coming off the trade deadline, acquisitions who are, you know, starting to produce and have effects on both their current teams and their former teams. So, you know, there's a lot to get to.
Right. And we haven't talked to James yet about all the trade deadline moves. So we're excited about that for sure. One trade that kind of jumps out, it's a sneaky move. We haven't really talked about it on the show yet because he hadn't made his debut quite yet, but big time debut over the weekend from Sam Bennett, Florida Panthers. And the way that they're constructing their top nine forward group right now with Wennberg and Hornquist on the third line, and then you see the second line emerging that I think leads your waiver wire list this week. You see Duclair and Sam Bennett on the line with Huberto. So, James, this is a line that I think could do some sneaky damage down the stretch, no?
I absolutely love this line, and I love the placement there for both Sam Bennett and Duclair. You know, Duclair, he had a great season overall, whether he was skating when he was healthy, with Alexander Barkov on that top line, opposite Carter Verhaeghe, obviously with Verhaeghe being injured right now. They're shaking everything up. But, you know, we've seen Sam Bennett for the last few years when he was with Calgary, and you just felt like he needed some kind of a change. He needed some kind of a reset, and he's finally, you know, getting that. I mean, career high in his first full season was 36 points. And then, you know, every year after that had been middling in like the 20s. He had 12 points in 52 games last year, 12 points in 38 games this year. It just felt like there was so much more to the player. And I think finally now in Florida, they're really going to kind of unleash him and let him go. And I think that pairing with a guy like Huberto, who is going to be by far the best player at even strength that he's ever consistently going to play with. And then you put a guy like Duclair on that line who, you know, is a 20, 25 plus goal scorer in, you know, so far at this point in his career. It's a great pairing, and Bennett brings a lot to the table. He's a playmaker, and he covers categories. He's a physical player. So, you know, he's definitely going to contribute in the hits and maybe even the blocks department. So I think it's right now one of the 10 or 12 second lines in the NHL that you really have to be jumping on, with two guys in Bennett and Duclair who are going to be widely available in leagues.
Well, and they have two games against the Columbus Blue Jackets to start the week. Those are very favorable matchups for Sam Bennett and the Florida Panthers. But on the tail end of the week, they play the Carolina Hurricanes twice, and Florida's only mustered one win against that opponent this season. That said, I'd still pick up Bennett. And I think, James, we're going to be talking about Sam Bennett next year too. I do not believe this is just a flash in the pan end of season trend here. I think this one's going to carry over big time. I think that Anthony Mantha, clearly from what we've seen, is the best player that was traded at the trade deadline. There's no argument. I could convince me otherwise. So I think we'll be talking about him for a long time here in fantasy. And I also think Sam Bennett, as Pete mentioned, is kind of the sneaky one that I think does have more impact than just this season.
I agree. I mean, Anthony Mantha, and I know you guys talked about it on the deadline show, you know, last week. It was not just he and Taylor Hall the two biggest names moved at the deadline. You know, we knew that Taylor Hall was going to be traded. I don't think really anybody saw it coming with Mantha getting moved at the deadline. You know, and especially for Jacob Vrana. And when you look at Mantha, I mean, he's 26 years old. You know, he's got an incredibly high ceiling. And the interesting thing about the deal was the fact that he just signed a contract extension going into this season with Detroit. And it was a little surprising to see them, you know, pull the trigger on a deal like this right now and ship a guy like that out. But I guess, you know, the temptation of getting a player like Vrana, who they felt fit with what they were trying better. You look at a guy like Mantha right now, and I would drop him probably now in the top 30 to 40 forwards going into next year for keeper leagues that you want to be considering. I think playing consistently in the top six, potentially even next year, if they want to try it on the first line with Alex Ovechkin and, you know, either Kuznetsov or Backstrom, Mantha has to be one of those, you know, top 50 to 70 forwards overall going into next season.
Right. And he's been amazing so far. I think we dropped him into like top 60, 70 forwards when the trade was initially made. But like, you're going to see him become a big riser this week once again after 4 goals and 5 points in his first 4 games with the Washington Capitals. So he has been total dynamite, like you said, James. And yeah, one other thing on Bennett. I mean, as much as he was always buried in the bottom six in Calgary, this guy in 2014 was a top 4 pick in the draft. You look at his playoff splits, 19 points in 30 games. Even with that placement at a time of year when you really show your true colors, right? Even if you're playing in the bottom six, we always see. And the Flames were never like a playoff powerhouse. They'd win a series and then they'd usually get bounced. But this was a guy that brought a lot to the table, and don't discount what he could do for this Florida team in a 7-game series against, say, Tampa Bay. If they match up and Tampa Bay's depleted, it could actually be a big wild card for the Panthers to maybe get that elusive playoff series win that they can't seem to get every year.
And another thing to kind of emphasize both of these points on Bennett and Mantha is Bennett was coming from a Calgary Flames team that was 24th in goals per game, 2.61. So not only was he in the bottom six, but the Flames couldn't score. So there's the problem right there. He instantly gets up to the second line with Florida, played 15 plus minutes in their first game with the team in the debut, and they're scoring 3.16 goals per game, which is tied for 10th. Same thing with Mantha. He went from a team scoring 2.22 goals per game, which is the last in the league, tied with Anaheim, actually. So nice company there, and goes to the Washington Capitals, who are scoring 3.50 goals per game, which is second only to Colorado. So there you have it. Instant fantasy success for both those players. And that's why I would go back to Sam Bennett here and say this is a great pickup for the week in your playoffs. You get 4 games, 2 are tough matchups, 2 are favorable. You probably get 15 minutes. You get the Duclair exposure, second line, and maybe even a power play trial if things, you know, in Florida continue to be a little bit banged up.
And I think we see too, guys, right? Like the Florida Panthers are a team that we can trust to some extent in fantasy playoffs. Even if you're looking at a streamer, like one of their secondary defensemen, like I know James, you like Nudavara going Monday night against his former team in the Blue Jackets. That's a good trend. He's been productive lately. Montour has been productive as well. Scored a goal the other day and was +3, I believe. And then the third line, like I said, has like guys like Wennberg and Hornquist who have been playing on the second line all season. And there's even like Marchment who plays with Barkov. So, and then Gusev as well plays with Barkov. So like, even if you're in the deepest of leagues, you can get a piece of the Florida Panthers and rest assured, even though they've burned us in years past, I think with all their adversity this year, they've proven to us that they're worth our trust. Whether it's Driedger or Duclair or Montour or any of those guys I just mentioned in the fantasy playoffs to help bring it home.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're quite possibly right now the deepest team outside of maybe like a Colorado or a Vegas that you can have exposure to. You know, you look at Wennberg and Hornquist, who are probably playing a little above their expectation and a little above their level right now. They're in a better spot in the lineup. I think third line suits both of them for where they are. And then obviously Hornquist is a solid power play guy, but you know, I think you look at the moves that they make. I mean, Gusev just being outright released by the Devils and then being able to add a top six winger like that for under $1 million for the rest of the season and just slot him onto that front line with Sasha Barkov, you know, they're hitting gold right now with every move that they make. They're making smart moves, and you know they are an incredibly deep team in fantasy. And they're reaping the benefits of that. I think fantasy owners should do the same.
So two players on your list staying in the same division here from the Dallas Stars. Ezra Lindell, James, a great defender in fantasy. And then Dennis Gurianov, a forward that we've all, you know, sung praises of previously on the program at one point or another. Now, I guess the best thing with Dallas, James, besides those two players, is they have four games against the Red Wings this week. They're 5-1-0 against that team. So you have to like either of these players, right?
I like both of these players coming into this week. I think that Lindell, he had the big playoff last year, and it's really kind of taken him an extended period of time to get going this season. 14 points in 43 games. He had 23 points last year in 69 games. So, you know, he's a little down since last season, but I love the category coverage. I love the all-around game that he brings. In leagues where you do count, you know, hits and block shots along with shots on goal. Yeah, he's not getting the power play production this season, only one power play assist, 13 even strength points. But he is bringing the plus minus of plus 13, and he is getting the category coverage. So I think in respect to leagues where you're going to need those stats and those numbers, he's a must add, especially with the favorable matchups coming up this week. And Gurianov is just one of those guys who's always run hot and cold. I know, he's a fan favorite of producer Bob, but he's having a solid season, 24 points in 43 games. He's just been very, very inconsistent. He's a very streaky player right now. And that team as a whole is inconsistent, but 6 points in four games, 12 shots on goal in four games against Detroit this season. You have to put both of these guys in your lineup, I think, this week.
And the Stars are 3 points behind the Nashville Predators for the fourth spot. They've played three fewer games, so Dallas is in a really good spot. And Dallas, to their credit, even during their bad times, they have by far the most overtime shootout losses in the NHL. They got 12, and the next highest team has 9. So, that's not always a great look. You can never break through. You can't find ways to break through, but they haven't had injuries on their side, of course. It's been the opposite. So the fact that they've been able to salvage so many points, still have games in hand over Nashville and Chicago, and still haven't fully hit their stride. Like, Hintz has been dynamite every time that he's in the lineup. And, we've seen great performances from Robertson, and we've talked about how good that line has been with Robertson, Pavelski, and Hintz when they're healthy. They've kind of closed the door since we last spoke on guys like Radulov and Bishop coming back, but this team still could get Tyler Seguin back at some point, which would be a really good wrinkle to have Ben and Seguin on a secondary line behind that top line. So yeah, Dallas is actually looking in really good shape, and we saw what happened with the Rangers guys, right? Like, they had four gimme games against the Devils. They dominated them in three of them, and then they eked out the one yesterday. So they're still in the playoff hunt too. So that's an example of how much the four straight games against the same weak opponent can do. It can kind of be like you really turn the opponent into a punching bag, and you make that, you make all up the ground you can.
And I think there's two predominant reasons why they're even in this part. Number one, they have the most overtime losses in the league, which is 12. We've seen it this season. It's so important just to get points in any which way you can. So that's the number one. The second thing is Jason Robertson, in my opinion, now should be the Calder Trophy winner. I've seen enough from this player with 32 points. Stop. And you're welcome to chime in here, Bob, but stop. 32 points. And the reason why I say that is because the Minnesota Wild have had the structure. They've had these guys waiting in the wings. The Dallas Stars have not. They have not had the prospect pool like this. They have not had the strong defense like Minnesota's had for the past decade. And this, and the other part of this is Jason Robertson has had to excel right away, absent Tyler Seguin, absent Radulov. And even when Radulov's been in the lineup, he's been hurt. Rupi Hintz has been out of the lineup every other night. Joel Kiviranta, who they were expecting a bigger thing from this year, out of the lineup on IR. So I just think that Jason Robertson has really kept this team level, and it goes to a lot of credit for him because Miro Heiskanen's numbers have dropped down. John Klingberg's numbers overall have dropped down. Robertson's been the guy keeping Dallas afloat.
Hey, this is not a knock on Robertson. Nice little season. But we all know that Kirill the Thrill, Dollar Bill Kirill, is the Calder winner. I'll take a look at the odds. I'll let you guys talk amongst yourself. I tip my cap to Robertson, but the most exciting, the most intriguing rookie all season long is Kirill. And Robertson, nice season. You put a nice season together, but you're not winning the Calder over Kirill. It's just not going to happen. Unless something crazy happens here in the last few weeks, it's just not going to happen just because of all the hype and the energy. And plus, Kirill has had an unbelievable season too. And he's such an exciting player, dynamic player, that I think it's a slam dunk. He's going to win it. And I'll pull up the odds and see what Robertson's sitting at right here on April 19th. Go ahead, James.
You know, I don't know if it's as much of a slam dunk as it
slam
was
dunk
2 weeks ago when we were talking. Robertson has closed that gap to only 4 points, behind Kaprizov, and he's done it in five less games. Kaprizov is 36 points in 43 games. Robertson is 32 and 38. Robertson actually has now edged ahead of him in even strength points. He's got 29 on the season. So
no one cares about the statistics, though. It's Kirill all the way.
Yeah, but Robertson is playing on that top line, and he's helping to power Dallas from the start that they had now potentially to being a playoff team. If it's very, very close, and, you know, Minnesota's been a playoff team all year. If he's one of the reasons why Dallas – gets into the playoffs because of his play, and he closes that point gap even more. I trust Dallas's offense right now a little bit more than I trust Minnesota's. I don't think it's that far-fetched from where we were 2-3 weeks ago to say that, you know, Robertson could catch Kaprizov. And, you know, speaking of Robertson, I just want to throw it out here too. His brother, Nick, is actually now skating in the top six for the Toronto Maple Leafs because of all of the injuries that they have. So definitely put Nick Robertson on your watch lists as a streaming option potentially, because Jason is pretty unavailable in Yahoo leagues.
Right. And Nick was kind of a dark horse rookie that we were talking about, but he's missed time with an injury. He was on the COVID list, all that stuff. So really hasn't played much at all this year. Had an assist the other day. Someone to definitely watch out for, because that has been a rotating game. Foligno also for Toronto. Watch out for him. He's probably going to make his debut as early as Thursday, last we heard. So, you know, Nick Foligno will bring the category coverage, and you have those couple of guys from Toronto that can give them new wrinkles and some fantasy production in the process, no doubt.
Hey, if you want to hear a good interview, Nick Foligno on with Darren Millard. He said he's playing Thursday. He's targeting Thursday as his first game with the Maple Leafs. Spent about a half an hour with him. He's at his summer house in Sudbury up there in Canada. And the guy is the best interview in the league. More players, if they just spoke like Nick Foligno and just let it all hang out, let it fly. Very wildly entertaining and informative. The fact that he's going back to Toronto where his dad played, I mean, it's just a great story. And I think he is an ingredient there for the Maple Leafs to make a deep run, combined with all the other pieces that they have, youthful talent, Spezza and Thornton and the leadership, the veterans that haven't won one. So listen to the interview, because it was good. The chirp with Darren Millard.
Okay, well, this is NHL Fantasy on Ice. Let's talk fantasy pucks.
It's called cross-promotion. It's called cross-promotion.
Let's go to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Cross-promotion.
Beautiful moment for the Canucks to get back in there, get the OT win. Do you like any players from that team the rest of the season? Because they do have a really favorable schedule. They are packing in games almost every other night for the rest of the way here.
You know, I do. I think it was actually a little interesting. I don't know where Thatcher Demko is in the protocol. I don't know if he's back, if he's close to being back. I know that he didn't play last night against Toronto. Braden Holtby started that game and actually looked, you know, very solid. I mean, 37 saves on 39 shots against Toronto. Toronto is now 0-1 or 0-0-1 against teams who haven't played a game in 25 days. So, you know, I think that when you look at everything, they're going to play a lot of games right now. And I think you need to tap into a guy like Braden Holtby if you you know, if you need goaltending help, because regardless of anything, he's going to get a lot of starts because of the compact schedule. There's no way that they're going to play, you know, Demko in a ton of these games. And until Demko returns, Holtby is going to be the guy. So, you know, he's 32% rostered in Yahoo leagues. And I think you need to jump on that right now. If for the last, you know, 2-3 weeks of the season, you're going to need a lot of bulk starts in net.
Right. And yeah, Demko is one of five Canucks in our top 200 rankings. The others are Besser, JT Miller, Bo Horvat, who scored the overtime winner, and Quinn Hughes, who also played last night. Demko, last I checked, is off the COVID protocol list. Of course, he didn't play yesterday, but I think you can get him back into your lineup this week, expecting him to get a couple of games for them. And also for Vancouver, no Elias Pettersson still, but something to keep an eye on if he's able to come back eventually. Could make them a dangerous team. And don't discount the possibility of Vancouver rallying around this situation and winning some games down the stretch and making the Canadiens sweat a little bit, because Montreal is 10 points ahead of Vancouver, but Vancouver's played four fewer games now that they were off for so long. So it's actually a possibility, if Vancouver finishes the season hot, that they could finish near Montreal for the fourth spot. So don't sleep on the Canucks. We all expected them to be in the playoffs. So maybe if they rally around this, you never know.
Maybe they get hot, play a little spoiler. Hey, let me just tell you what Vegas thinks about Robertson winning the Calder. Plus 950 compared to Kaprizov, who's minus 700. So maybe it is worth a shekel on Robertson. Yeah, maybe it's worth it. But usually when you're minus 700 at this point in the season to win the Calder, you win the Calder. So, but you know what? It's not a bad thought to drop something on Robertson at such long odds. I mean, plus 950, it might as well. I mean, it's not a bad bet, honestly. But again, I just can't see Robertson winning the Calder. Just especially now when I look at these odds, minus 700 versus plus 950, tough to see it happening.
Yeah, but when you look at the body of work right now, and that's not what – Vegas isn't looking at the body of work.
They're looking
Vegas
at the body of work. They don't care about the body of work, James, because Kaprizov is going to win the Calder just because he's Kaprizov and the dynamic player that he is and all the attention that he's gotten. I'm sorry. He just moves the needle more than Jason Robertson. Whether it's fair or not, that's just the case. So they don't care about the body of work. It's just like, you know, certain times – and Rob knows this – certain times you look at the Hart Trophy, players win it. Because of the statistics they put up, they're not technically the most valuable, but it's how you look at it. And then all the momentum that is behind the player. I'm not saying that Robertson, he probably deserves a little bit more momentum, and we could wave that flag for him again, but Kaprizov is going to win it.
It's worth a pop at those odds. I agree. I think Kaprizov is probably going to win because of what he did the early season, but I was just making the case based on my opinion. I think Robertson,
it's a great case too.
The clear cut at this point, more valuable player to the team. I do have to bring up the point, gentlemen, that the fantasy season does end prior to Vancouver finishing the season by a little bit now from their delay. So you have to be careful picking those guys up. It's one of the concerns I have about the team, although I was really impressed that they were able to win that game against Toronto. So I think, although I did think there was going to be some regression with the team this year, I do like them on an outside shot to get back in here if they can rally around a win like that. It's just without Petey coming back into the lineup for them, I just find it hard that they're going to be able to win enough of these games. I like the storyline. I hope they stay in it to make it tight like the Central Division is now, but I think it's a long shot for them.
One interesting thing about that, and we're not sure if they're going to extend, if Yahoo would extend the week to that final week. But now that the Colorado Avalanche have this situation going on where they're not playing again till at least Thursday, and we don't know for sure. We know Grubauer, one of the top fantasy goalies, is still out for another like week and a half at least. But when you start talking about the Avalanche not playing games, it's a little bit different than the Canucks, because the Avalanche have MacKinnon and Rantanen, two of the top five players in fantasy. They have Grubauer, the top goalie, Makar, the top defenseman. I mean, you're talking about guys that people drafted extremely high in fantasy and who would get, you know, the short end of the stick if this team has to push their schedule back. So that's one thing that I would say, you know, maybe Yahoo would reconsider that thing if the Avalanche missed some time. We will see, and we will make the case for that if we need to. But, you know, just something to keep an eye out now that it's not just one team in the Canucks, it's also the Colorado Avalanche. And then one other guy I wanted to mention, just Calder consideration. Sorokin got his third shutout the other day. If you listen to this program from the beginning of this season, we were really high on Shesterkin and even higher on Sorokin in keeper leagues. If you got one or both of them in your keeper leagues, like I think all three of us did in one league or another, right, guys? Like you're in really good shape. Sorokin's up to a 922 save percentage this year as the 1B for the Islanders.
I have Sorokin in one of my leagues, and in my keeper league, I traded Shesterkin and Samsonov for Makar and Hughes in separate deals. So I had the three of them with Vasilevsky, and I now have Sorokin and Vasilevsky. So I'm sitting pretty for years to come. But yeah, I mean, Sorokin definitely deserves some consideration. I don't think he's going to get really a lot just because of his bulk volume of starts. So far, I think that he deserves to get a more extended crack in the net. But we know that the Islanders, and we know Barry Trotz, they have a lot of faith in Semyon Varlamov too. So, you know, even though Sorokin has played very well, especially as of late, I see it more as a split over the last, you know, 10, 12 games versus one getting more starts than the other. But yeah, I agree. I think, you know, if he's available out there, you have to go out and pick him up with whenever he's playing at the moment.
So you have a good pulse on the team, James, the Islanders. I saw a graphic yesterday watching their game that their scoring has dropped drastically with Anders Lee out of the lineup. Palmieri owners, I'm getting some questions on Twitter. Is it, you know, should I move on from this player because it's the Islanders? I still like the team, but that's just me. I do worry, though, that they don't have the offensive guns to win you the trophy in fantasy. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's outside of really their goaltending and Matt Barzal, but even Barzal has gone pretty quiet. You know, good friend of the show, Nick Alberga, has been keeping everybody updated on a day-by-day basis right now. I believe the last time I checked in with him last night, he said the Islanders have scored 6 goals in 8 games since acquiring Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. He's failed to point out that they've won 5 of those games, but you know, they have gone into a little bit of a scoring drought right now. And I think that you know, it's something to be concerned about outside of, you know, really just Matt Barzal.
Well, that doesn't matter to Nick, right? Why does he care if they've won, what, 5 of 6? He cares about the 6 goals in 8 games, which at some point you'd imagine the team comes together, the chemistry gets figured out, Barzal gets going. I like the fact that they won that game last night, despite the lack of offensive production. I still like the moves.
I mean,
I get it. But I still like the Islanders, like Rob, in the playoffs. But yeah, you wonder, like we do every year, we all sit here and we say, do they have when they need that goal, when they fall behind, can they come back and score? Can they get that offensive production for the entirety of the playoffs? And say, yeah, we still wonder about that. But they're a really good team structure. And the goalie in Sorokin, hey, listen, he's looked great, so give him credit.
It begs the question of what would have happened had they pulled the trigger on Taylor Hall instead of Palmieri and Zajac, with how Hall has had the effect on the Bruins. I mean, 13 points in 4 games, that line with Krejci, Hall, and Smith. Krejci and Smith still, it blows my mind that both of them are still under 50% rostered in Yahoo. If they're available in your league, you have to go out and get both of them.
But you got to remember, did Taylor Hall want to go to the New York Islanders? He had control over the entire situation. He wanted to go to one team and one team only. In my opinion, he chose that team. He chose the right team, and that's Boston. And they got a championship culture with great players, and he's fitting in because he's not the go-to guy. Taylor Hall's never been the go-to guy. He fits in quietly on that second line, and away he goes, and he's been playing well. And yeah, I'd love to see Taylor Hall on the Islanders, but I don't know if he wanted to go there. I don't know if he would have signed off on that trade.
And I don't know if Taylor Hall would do well if he was playing on a third line either. I think maybe Palmieri is better suited for something like that and was a better fit for them for sure. And what did I say on the last show? Remember I said like Barry Trotz doesn't care about like offensive flair and fantasy stuff. He actually said that yesterday. He actually said it. James pointed it out to me. He, you know, I guess he was answering, why is Leo Komarov still on the top line with Barzal and Eberle? He's like, I know he's not a fantasy hockey favorite, but we're not playing fantasy hockey. He actually said that. So, I mean, that was like our, not our suspicions, but like we know that Trotz is more concerned about, as he should be, he's more concerned about like getting the team deep in the playoffs and refining everybody's roles. And then he actually like went out there and put it on the bulletin board. So good for him. And he confirmed what we were thinking all along.
It's going to be a very, very telling next 10 days for the Islanders. And I'd fade them a little bit in fantasy playoff matchups. I mean, they have their next six games are against the Rangers and the Capitals. So with the way that they've played the last week and a half, until they really show you something, I outside of the goaltending, I'm probably fading a lot of their guys in fantasy lineups.
And it's interesting because the top two teams in the East, in my opinion, the Caps and the Islanders have their goaltending or their goaltending shirt up. The Capitals do not, but the Capitals can score with anybody. So you kind of have two opposite problems with the top two teams, something to watch down the stretch and into the first round of the playoffs for sure. I do want to touch on the Vegas Golden Knights, James. This team looks fantastic right now. Three of their lines are producing, the top two especially. Chandler Stephenson is on your list. He's really heated up as of late. What do you like about this player for the fantasy playoffs?
You know, it begs the question. You even just mentioned the scoring for Washington. It begs the question that if this guy was so good, how could Washington not get more out of him, but Vegas is able to? He's just solidified that top line. He's been... You know, I guess you could say he's kind of the new William Karlsson from, you know, the first season when Karlsson was just that all around player. Stephenson, when he's been in the lineup and he's centered that top line with Pacioretty and Stone, who are quietly having just incredible seasons. I think Mark Stone is up to about 50 points so far this season, and you really just don't even hear about him at the moment. Stephenson is just on an absolute tear as of late. The last, you know, 2-3 weeks, he's been one of the top forwards skating on that line. He's 6 points plus 7, 14 shots on goal. Everything's coming at even strength, which is probably the only knock that you can have on him because he does center that top power play. And, you know, he's on there with Pacioretty, with Stone, with Shea Theodore. So, you know, you would expect a little bit more man advantage production from him, but with the exposure that he has and the fact that he's only rostered in 32% of Yahoo leagues, he's a guy you have to go out and pick up right now because the you know, his floor is the ceiling at this point.
One note I saw on Pacioretty, he's one of 10 players with 20 plus goals, 20 plus assists. So like playing with a guy like that and then Stone, who's a big assist guy. I mean, you're going to chip in your points. You're going to have a great plus minus like he does. He's plus 17 on the season, covering categories. And if we've learned anything to this point last year, even when Stastny was there, now Stastny's gone, like Stephenson is their number one center on that line. They're not mixing and matching anymore. They're leaving him there for better or worse. Come playoff time, I think, you know, probably would be one of the worst number one centers in the league in terms of individual ability and scoring flair. But if he's the best fit on that line and they know it and they're sticking with it, it lends to some stability for the lineup. And it could be a good it could be a good thing for that team that's trying to break through. Right. They're confirmed with that lineup for the rest of the season. No doubt. So it's not like you're going to pick up Stephenson and then, you know, two games later, he's going to get moved off. That's not going to happen.
My only concern right now about the Vegas Golden Knights, and I think this team right now looks to me to be a better bet to going deep than the Colorado Avalanche, only because they've got two goalies. They've got defense with no concerns, in my opinion. Everybody on their forward group has a little bit more to give, too. Other than Mark Stone, who's looked like a superstar every single night, I think he's maxed out right now. But beyond that, it's their power play. They had 8 different guys get up to the 2-minute mark on the power play against the Ducks last game. I think that's a problem because their unit's converting at 17% overall. That's 24th or 25th in the league. That's not going to win you a playoff series. Look at Colorado. They're up in the top 10. Washington second. Carolina's first. Those are the teams that went around in the playoffs. So I think they need to figure this thing out. And Chandler Stephenson has gotten more and more minutes lately on the top unit. So hopefully they can find something there, James, because I think that's the key. That Vegas, if they go on a deep run, they're going to need that power play to be over 20%. And Stephenson, just funny enough, might be the guy.
Yeah, you know, the one knock that you can really put on Chandler Stephenson, like I said, is the fact that right now Marc-Andre Fleury has more power play points than Chandler Stephenson does this season.
That's incredible, by the way. Where did you find that?
Well, Marc-Andre Fleury had a power play assist against the Ducks over the weekend. So, you know, he at least has one power play assist, and Chandler Stephenson doesn't even have a power play point this year. So
just want to update two stats real quick. It looks like Stephenson has 5 power play points, James, this season. So he's doing okay.
I know.
We want to see that above 10.
I was kidding about that.
And
I
then
was kidding about
I just looked. Dallas is 4-1-0 against Detroit this season. I think I said 5-1-0. So for what it's worth, if you're going to throw a shekel on Detroit now because of that, you know, go for it.
I meant no power play points in the last 2 weeks for Stephenson.
Okay, yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem with that team. They had the same problem last season and the year before against the Caps in the Stanley Cup final, where Shea Theodore couldn't even stay on the top power play unit. So this is not new for Vegas. Now they have an embarrassment of riches. They've got to figure it out. Pete DeBoer is probably a good coach to do that.
I'm sure Pete's got something on Vegas. Pete, what do you have to say on Vegas before? I have a sledgehammer tonight. I'm going to throw that out. I want some picks on the Monday board. But what do you have on Vegas, Pete?
Well, I was just going to say both of their goalies are going full throttle right now. I have them both as a tandem in one league. The only thing that's holding me back is some days where I'm not able to check my lineup at 6:30 and maybe I have the other one going. Because if you pay attention to that, I mean, you're full money almost every night on those two guys. Leonard's been amazing over the past couple of weeks. It's good to see him back healthy and at an elite level. And nobody has better goaltending than Vegas. I know you were saying Vasilevsky with Tampa Bay, but the two-headed monster is just crazy. Give me those guys come playoff time. Mm. Even if one of them gets injured, you're still in great shape.
I don't know about that. I think Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the game, and he's been out there every single game, and he just keeps winning games, and he's won a Stanley Cup. So I like Vasilevsky. Okay, here we go. Speaking about Vasilevsky, I don't know if he's in net tonight against Carolina or not. I don't care. He probably is. I'll take the Carolina Hurricanes at plus money to beat Tampa Bay. That is the sledgehammer. I like the price on Carolina. I think they go into Tampa and win the game. So there you have it. That's my sledgehammer. Put it on the board. I'm looking to move to 5-1, I believe. We haven't had a bunch of sledgehammers as of late. So listeners, tell me. But remember, when you're going against Tampa Bay, you know, it's hold your breath and hope for the best, because they're that good of a team. And sometimes, you know, like I just said, with Vasilevsky, he can steal the game. So, but I do like Carolina tonight.
I could definitely see Carolina coming out of this one. I don't love it enough right now to take it as a sledgehammer.
Sledge.
But, you know, they've been playing very, very good. Tampa Bay has been a little off lately, so I can definitely see I can see it happening. There are a lot of really big lines on the board tonight. Just a lot of really big, heavy favorites. I love Dallas over Detroit. You know, Chicago over Nashville, or Nashville over Chicago, I don't think is a lock. I kind of like Chicago at the plus 120, and I kind of like Arizona at plus 125 against Minnesota. If I was looking for a couple of underdogs that I think can hit, but I don't like anything enough tonight to sledge it.
Yeah, a lot of the teams that I like to win are the favorites here. I'm not seeing any plus numbers that are really jumping out to me. I mean, so Edmonton is, you know, they haven't really been playing much, right? Like, so they're going to be playing here against Montreal. I'm interested to see what they have going. I know that what Nugent Hopkins has been out for a while for that team, just something to watch. I mean, I think we're at the point where Edmonton's a definite playoff team, but what they have to do with their lines when Nugent Hopkins is out of the mix is a little concerning. It's like they have to go back to stacking their two best guys. And I think Puljujarvi is the third wheel on there. So Puljujarvi, for at least as long as RNH is out, is someone to look out for in DFS. I do not have a sledgehammer for tonight. You know, Vegas, I wanted to mention Vegas is undefeated against the Sharks this year. So look for them to keep it going. And it's a no sledge for me tonight.
Well, that Oilers game is as close to a sledge as I'm going to get without giving the actual sledge. I have a little hesitation because the Canadiens, they're kind of due for a big game, although I think that ship is sinking quick, taking on way too much water there. The Oilers, though, they only played one game last week, which did cost my fantasy season, but I think the icing on the cake for me in my playoff matchup was picking up Cole Caulfield, only to have it find out that Montreal was pulling a PR stunt so that they didn't ask about the heartbreaking loss to Calgary, who has been terrible, you know, this season. So the Cole Caulfield thing, if you can't fit a prospect on an entry-level contract into your lineup and you're struggling to maintain the fourth overall standing in the easiest division in the NHL, I just don't think you're in a good position to succeed in this league, especially next season. If the divisions go back to normal, they are going to be in for a very rude awakening, regardless if they can fit Cole Caulfield in the lineup or not.
Yeah, that wasn't a great look, I'll have to say. Not the greatest of looks for the Montreal Canadiens not being able to figure out a way to get Caulfield on the roster and on the ice. But
right now, according to our friends over at Cap Friendly, the Canadiens have just over $362,000 in cap space. So they cannot fit Cole Caulfield's entry-level contract on right now.
For like 9 games.
Yeah, for 9 games. That you can't find somebody that you can do anything with.
The sky will fall if Montreal, if somehow there's a Canadian, the Canadians don't make the playoffs and come out of the Canadian division, just make the playoffs, the sky will fall, and it will fall quickly in Montreal. I mean, that will not be a good look for the franchise, who came in with such high expectations coming into the season. I mean, there's a Canadian division. You are the Montreal Canadiens. You must make the playoffs. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You must make the playoffs, especially with that fan base.
The interesting thing is going to be if one of these Canadian teams gets to the Cup final, you know, how are they going to be able to play it? You know, are they going to allow inter-border travel between, you know, for games, or are the Canadian teams, once they get to the Final Four, going to have to play here in the States?
We'll let the folks on Mahogany Row figure that out. A bunch of smarter people than us to figure that out. And they will figure it out just like they did last year, which was, I mean, what they pulled off last year.
Last year was incredible.
We'll get it done. But yeah, those are all valid questions I think everyone's wondering about, James. Yeah.
You know, a Canadian team could potentially win the Stanley Cup, not in front of their fans and not in Canada.
Right.
And they'd be the home team.
Yeah, one fan question that I thought was really good that we got right before the show started was a goalie question involving a goalie from a Canadian team that we were really high on as recently as last week, Jack Campbell. This guy's wondering, should I drop Jack Campbell for Anton Khudobin ahead of this stretch against the Red Wings? And I don't know. It's Toronto's got some concerns right now with Matthews being out. And I know Nylander came back for the last game and had a multi-point game, so that was a good sign. But we were talking about teams like Vegas struggling on the power play. I believe Toronto's power play is worst in the league since like early March, which is just kind of a random trend. But what do you guys think about that? Would you go Khudobin or Ottinger over Campbell at this rate?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Khudobin is going to get the start tonight. Just checking my Twitter feed right now, and I saw that he was the first goaltender off the ice, so it looks like he's going to get the start. Like we said, they play 4 games against Detroit this week. I think – are any of the games back-to-back for Dallas and Detroit this week?
I don't believe so off the top of my head.
It is a back-to-back tonight and tomorrow. Okay. So Ottinger will go, you know, seemingly tomorrow night, but then it's Thursday, Saturday. So I would say right now, probably Khudobin, if he plays well tonight and he plays well Thursday, will get 3 of the 4 starts this week. So yeah, I would probably take advantage of that.
This is the one time of year I actually do play the schedule. Normally, I would always go with the best guy, who, in my opinion, right now still is Campbell. With the schedule, though, I think you do play Khudobin. The reason why, if he wins tonight, which is very likely, I think they're going to give him maybe 2 of those starts towards the end of the week as well. So worst case scenario for Khudobin, you're looking at 2 wins this week and 2 starts. That, to me, is way more of a slam dunk than Campbell getting 3 starts but maybe zero wins because they play the Canucks tomorrow, and then they play the Jets twice at the tail end of the week. That Jets matchup right now is not one I want to be with Toronto with a shaky lineup. So I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars and just play the matchups now.
And if we're talking two wins and two starts potentially for Khudobin, one of them could be a shutout because he does have three shutouts on the season, even with very inconsistent team around him this year. So something to look out for there. Shutouts at this time of year, however you can get them, that could tilt the matchup and give you that extra category win. So don't discount that, and looking for goalies who can provide that. But James, thanks for coming on. As always, man, great to catch up with you. And been a long time, longer than usual, but good to see you, man.
Yeah, it's been a long couple of weeks. Unfortunately, couldn't swing it with my schedule last week to get on and chit chat with you guys for the trade deadline. But it's good to be back, and you know it's the most exciting time of the year for us in the fantasy playoffs. So it's always great to be on, and looking forward to next week already.
At Waiver Wire James on Twitter. If you have any more questions for James, you can catch Petey and I at NHL Fantasy on Instagram, and Twitter at NHL Jensen for his regular handle, at NHL Reese for mine, and Bobby at Aircheck if you want to chirp him maybe about tonight's sledge, because Vasilevsky is starting. And
I'm screwed if he pitches
a shutout after you're raving about him on program and then picking against him. So
I'm
follow the storyline closely, and we will talk to everybody on Wednesday.